and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome back. What a jam-packed crowd today. We have had just guests since they've been rolling in here since I sat in my chair today. And joining me in the studio right now is Joan Tuke and Barry Wood. Now, Joan Tuke and Barry Wood are with, they are here on behalf of the Art Gallery of Northumberland to talk about this incredible event that's coming up. But Joan Tuke is a volunteer at the AGN. Barry Wood is a member of Heritage Crammy. But they are both part of the Northumberland Went to War Curatorial Committee. And so welcome them to the show. Again, yeah. These people love a reason to applaud. I don't even have to flick the switch anymore. We've got the best audience on radio. So for Northumberland Went to War, for those of you that aren't aware of this, maybe you just woke up Rip Van Winkle. I'm speaking to you specifically. Northumberland Went to War 1914 to 1918. It is a commemorative exhibit. It is at the Art Gallery of Northumberland, which is located conveniently at 55. It's at Victoria Hall, 55 King Street West in Coburg. ArtGalleryOfNorthumberland.com for more information. You can check that out. The event officially kicks off on November 3rd, and there's a big event that takes place. It's at 7 p.m. It continues right through till December 14th, and we will be commemorating the war. Joan's waving her hand at me, but we're going to listen to Donovan first. Here is Donovan and Universal Soldier, because this is what we're talking about right here.
He's 5 foot 2, and he's 6 feet 4. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31, and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Laval? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Welcome back. And, of course, Donovan, the song Universal Soldier. We are talking about going to war. because we right now we're in the middle of it. This is the 100th anniversary of the First World War. We are right in the middle of it, and right about now, I mean, if I remember correctly, Passchendaele was like November of 17. So again, you know, still fresh in our collective memories, and there are probably. I don't believe there are any First World War vets alive anymore.
There are not.
But this show, Northumberland Went to War, this talks about the contribution that the county made. And, I mean, I was not aware of the contribution, for instance, from the Alderville First Nations. They, my understanding is they were the largest contingent of Indigenous fighters Canada sent to the fronts in France.
That's correct.
I believe that's right.
Yeah. And, I mean, I still get chills thinking about that. I heard about that yesterday, and I thought to myself, you know what? They don't get enough credit, but the one thing that bothered me the most about that when I first, because I heard that and then I thought, oh, that was great. And then I heard that when they went to fight the war, they had to give up their Indigenous status. They had to give up their native status in order to fight for the crown.
Yeah, and when they were sort of segregated on at the front as well in a way, and they were not treated equally with the other soldiers, even at that. Even though they brought extra skills to the whole thing. If you've read the Joseph Boyden, the 40 mile road, it was about the snipers, who were, of course, the expert shots, and there were a couple of native guys who go.
Well, and the trackers, the guys they said. I mean, these guys were able to do incredible, like the clandestine stuff they were doing during the nights when they were, you know, locating enemy lines or locating targeting. I think they call that targeting now, actually, in the Canadian forces. Sure. So they're going out in the middle of the night through no man's land targeting. You know, the next morning's barrage is going to be as a result brought to you by, you know, and again, no credit for that, not given the proper credit. One of the highest decorated Canadian soldiers ever was a First Nation soldier.
Yeah, I just was reading about him today.
And again, the sacrifice from this community, though, I mean, what was it you think, obviously, I mean, a United Empire loyalist, obviously, but what was it that really sort of galvanized the movement here in Northumberland, do you think, to get people to go?
Well, I think it's, I'm not sure if it was different from anywhere else in Canada, although it probably was, and it probably had something to do with the number of immigrants from the UK who were still here. And at that time, don't forget, we're in 1914, we're only not even 50 years into Confederation yet, and there were still a lot of people, the majority of the population probably had parentage or at least relations back in the UK somewhere. And the appeal was special for them, I think, and the whole idea of empire and king had not yet become as sort of tarnished as it became later on. It was still the shiny thing, you know, the king, the monarch, the empire that rules the ocean must continue to rule the ocean. So everybody sort of sprung to that for king and empire.
Well, and we were still British subjects at the time, too.
Yeah, that's right. We were still the Dominion of Canada, not independent, no flag, no anthem, no charter
credit,
of our own.
No credit either in some of the incredible battles that we were talking about Passchendaele before this, but the battle at the Somme, the battle at Vimy Ridge, and the huge sacrifice. I mean, the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary was essentially wiped out.
Yep, that's right. In one day. July 1st, 1916.
You think as a Canadian, because, you know, the Americans always take credit. We've talked about this before, too. The Americans, as far as they're concerned, they won the war. So if every war in the last 100 years, if the U.S. hadn't gotten involved, we would have lost. But the reality is, you know, the contribution from the Dominion of Canada and the other Dominion forces is really sort of ignored by the Crown, because, of course, they just refer to that as British units.
That's right. Although, by the end, the Canadian contingent was fighting as a unit, and that was because of the accomplishments at Vimy and the way that was planned by Sir Arthur Currie, who was also vilified in many ways in the very courtroom in Coburg Victoria Hall right now, where we sit. That trial went on because of a personal vendetta, I believe. But his motives were questioned, but his accomplishments were indisputable. And after the success at Vimy, the Canadians were allowed to fight as a Canadian unit. And by the late part of the war, by the last year of the war, Sir Douglas Haig, he was the overall commander of all Allied forces, with the toughest fighting, he called on the Canadians because he knew they could be counted on. They were the stormtroopers of the BEF at this point.
Well, and I remember reading about how at one point the Canadian authorities, if you will, the guys in charge over there, basically went to the British commanders and said, you are just using our boys as lambs to slaughter, and we're not doing this. That was one of the other things that motivated the creation of a single Canadian contingency, was because they were just cherry-picking the best of our boys.
That's right.
And sending them into the most atrocious battles, I can't remember the battle in particular where they basically just sent our guys to be murdered. And the Canadian commanders had their British commanders up, literally throttling them by the throat, saying, "You've murdered thousands of our boys."
Yeah, there were stories like that throughout the war, Dave, from all quarters and all sides. Mm-hmm. You know, we have officers sitting at General Staff headquarters and looking at a map and saying, "Well, I say, old chap, why don't you just send them forward 500 yards and they'll be all fine." Now, they didn't know that it was solid mud with water up to your waist in those 500 yards. They didn't know. They didn't care. And if they were told, they said, "Well, just tell them to keep going, old boy."
And shoot them if they turn around.
Well, exactly.
You know, and that is just a terrible thing. But, you know, that's war, first of all. It's not a carnival. It is war. But by the same token, one of the biggest lessons we took from that war is the fact that, you know, if you want to continue to engage, that you need to do so with a considerable amount of thought, that you can't just send in. I mean, they were losing guys in the early parts of the battle. They were like 20,000 guys or 30,000. I mean, I'm not sure if I remember correctly, the largest battle was like 100,000 men killed on both sides.
Yeah, probably the first day at the Somme, which we would be in the middle of 100 years ago right now.
That's right.
July 1st, and it dragged through into November, middle of November. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that Joan, I think, yeah. So it was ongoing for a few meters of French soil, and not very much at that. Mm-hmm. But they recognized, or it was at that point that Douglas Haig was converted to the idea that this was a war of attrition, and we knew there were going to be massive losses on both sides, but you had to do it anyway because that was the only way that they could see to ending the war.
Mm-hmm.
So they just knew that there'd be massive casualties on both sides, and that July 1st is the biggest single losses in the British forces in the history of their entire army ever.
Absolutely.
And probably the Germans too.
My guests in the studio are Joan Took and Barry Wood. We are talking about Northumberland Went to War. That's the new commemorative exhibit that is opening very shortly, runs right through. So, again, to celebrate Remembrance Day, you may want to drop by the Victoria Hall and check out some of these incredible photographs. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation and more of the excitement that was 100 years ago right here in Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Mondays can be mundane, Tuesdays can be tedious, but by Wednesday, the hope of a weekend is coming into sight. Hi, it's Kevin Stewart, and I'll help you get to the middle of the work week Wednesday mornings at 10. The steps are simple. Some interesting talk, a variety of really good tunes, a couple of good features, sometimes a guest, and once it's over, you know your work week is half done. Let's get there together this week for the midweek warm-up on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
The Art Gallery of Northumberland presents Northumberland Went to War, 1914 to 1918. From November 3rd to December 4th, come and experience this important exhibition depicting the impact of the First World War on the people of Northumberland County. Watch for special displays at the Colborne Art Gallery and at libraries, archives, and store windows throughout the county. Celebrating an important part of local history, Northumberland Went to War, presented by the Art Gallery of Northumberland at Victoria Hall, 55 King Street West in Cobourg.
The birds are tweeting, and so are we. Follow us on Twitter at TrulyLocal89.7.
And welcome back, everybody. My guests, as I say, are Joan Took and Barry Woods. They are with Barry's with Heritage Crammy, and Joan is a volunteer at the AGN. They are both here as part of the Northumberland Went to War Curatorial Committee. And the show, Northumberland Went to War, 1914 to 1918. Now, as you were saying before during the break there, that you really kind of focused on 1916 to 1918 because that's sort of when the buildup really began, especially from our area.
The recruitment was done in Northumberland and in Durham counties in 1915-16.
Right.
And the troops went for training in 16, really didn't get to Britain till much later. So the counties to the east of us, Quinte, etc.,
right,
they were recruited first.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So those troops went first. Now, I've seen articles indicating small groups from Northumberland went in 1415, but the major, a battalion has to be 1,000 people.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
1,000 men.
Yeah.
So to recruit that many, it was done in 1916.
Wow. Yeah.
So Sam Hughes was the recruiter, basically, in Port Hope in Durham.
Okay.
And then they were also recruited in Cobourg for the 139th.
Wow. Again, and so these guys, for the most part, didn't get there till, you know, 1917, late 1917, probably closer through the end of the war then.
No.
The very first Canadian contingent, I think there was a smallish contingent that actually sailed out of Quebec City in very late 1914, the very first one.
Right. Well, I'm talking about these guys here. Guys from here.
Yeah, I think it was early in 16 that they went over. So mm-hmm. they were in action by the end of 16, I
okay.
think.
They marched out of Cobourg in May of 16.
Okay. Right.
May. So they were in action by the end.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Really? So they would have been there for Christmas?
Yeah.
And that's the irony, too, because, of course, they always said this would be over by Christmas,
yeah,
if you remember.
Every year.
Don't worry. We're going to get there.
We're home by Christmas.
Home by Christmas. Yeah. And yet they continue to fight for the same, if you will. And, I mean, when we're talking about distance, a lot of people don't realize it. I mean, I'm sitting in the studio at 1000 Elgin Street West. Across the road from me, if you will, is the hot tub store. Mm-hmm. That entire expanse between myself and the hot tub store would have been just an impassable barbed wire, blown up, crater-filled mess of blood and guts. Yeah. And the goal would be to get from my front door to the halfway point would be just a great result.
And then to what end? That's the question
exactly.
that the soldiers, the guys in the trench would ask themselves, okay, yes, I'm going to put my butt on the line and go out there and try to take that little objective in the middle of no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
But what then? So now I'm in that stinky foxhole that you described, Dave, and what am I supposed to do with it? Why am I here and what am I supposed to do? Am I mm-hmm. supposed to continue on and try to take that German trench by myself or with my guy mate who's here with me? And what do we meet on the other side? I mean, the Canadians became known for their trench raiding capabilities and how good at it they were. They'd go out with a small platoon or a semi-platoon of 10 to 12 guys who were really great in the dark and up close, and they would steal their way across no man's land at 2 in the morning, and suddenly they would slam themselves into a German trench and start slugging away and kill a few guys if they were lucky, or take mm-hmm. a prisoner, or get some maps or some intel out of the people that they got, and race back to the Canadian lines with all their mates if they were lucky, and mm-hmm. leave a few behind if they weren't, which was more common.
Well, and to your point, to what end?
To what end?
You know, and this has really been the biggest struggle for me as a person who's, you know, I've been following the Second World War, every other war of the 20th century. I had a really close friend of mine when I was in grade four who knew every battle of World War One and Two. He could tell you what the losses were on both sides. And we used to sit and argue, but talk about the futility. I mean, if there was ever a war that was completely a futile effort that doesn't seem to have done any good or done any real changes, it was the First World War. I mean, when the war ended, the things went back pretty much the way they were before.
And 20 years later, there it was again, literally.
Yeah.
There are people who could say that really there weren't two world wars. There was only one with a 20-year hiatus.
Yeah.
And it came right out of the Treaty of Versailles and everything that was imposed
mm-hmm.
at that treaty. And, you know, those guys, we've all read Macmillan's book, and those people did the best they could with what they had at the time. And there were impossible allegiances and alliances mm-hmm. and ethnic and nationalist issues to be dealt with, and they did the very best they could from a standpoint of Western middle-aged white man supremacy,
right.
I think, which
affected
everything.
We can look at Syria, Iraq, what's going on there now, Afghanistan, what's going on there now, Israel and Palestine, all of that, all of those conflicts that we're still dealing with today, the destruction of the Ottoman Empire, mm-hmm. the birth of Turkey, modern Turkey, mm-hmm. all of that is a result of this really badly designed, failed, if you will, adventure into militarism by the great Western powers.
That's
we
right.
are still living with this.
Yeah, because lines were drawn on a map that divided peoples
mm-hmm.
from themselves and became international borders instead of all the families are on the same side of the border.
Yeah.
And it split families and tribes and ethnic groups that would have been well off better together, bigger mm-hmm. than a cohesive unit who mm-hmm. belong together and know mm-hmm. something about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, this event is it mostly photographic, or are there some videos that we're going to be seeing, or have there been presentations put together as videos? We've seen those great Ken Burns movies where they take photographs and turn them into movies.
You should ask Barry about the presentation. Done one.
I couldn't speak about that because I'm the star. No, we have done a 12-minute video. It's showing at our exhibition in Crimea. Well, one thing I should mention en route to talking about this, Dave, is that there are satellite exhibits around the county. Some of them are a few storyboards in a storefront, or some of them are at various libraries and town halls around the county. In Crimea, because we have the good fortune to have reestablished the Heritage Room at the Colborne Art Gallery, so we have our little Heritage Museum right there and on Main Street in Colborne, King Street. And we have a whole room dedicated to Northumberland Went to War. So we have our own little exhibit. Of course, it's a fraction of the size of what we have at the AGN going on here. But we do have a 12-minute video depicting the exploits of our Victoria Cross winner, who grew up and lived and worked in Colborne. And it's not a reenactment, but a description of by an actor who is portraying a friend of his or a mate at the time. It happens to be me. there you are. So that's running, and we're hoping to have that running here at the AGN as well. So there will be a video aspect going on. But there's a world of artifacts which we have dug up. And the cool, maybe Joan could address this, of where all these artifacts came from.
We have about 40 loaners, people who have loaned us things, families who have loaned us things. And that was our intent, to find out what people considered important. After 100 years, what have they kept?
Right.
What is important? And we were a little bit surprised because the focus is still on the military. It's the medals. It's the dead man's pennies that were, you know, if your son, et cetera, died, you got one of these.
For those of you that don't know what it is, it's I guess it's made of copper. It's large. It's almost like
size of a teacup,
like a medal.
It's
a big medal.
Yeah, and it's heavy.
So imagine like a bronze medal, or if you will, from the Olympics. It's roughly that size.
And it has the name of the person who died, but not his rank.
Right.
So the brigadier general gets the same as the private.
Right.
Issued by the king. With a very attractive package. Apparently some of the families used them on the headstones.
Yeah, I've seen them on the headstones. Yeah.
So we have a couple of those. We have other very interesting medals. We have the little boxes that were given to the soldiers, supposedly in 1914, but it took 2 or 3 years to give them out by Princess Mary,
right,
the only daughter of George V, which had cigarettes or tobacco or chocolates for nurses, et cetera.
So it's like a care package, if you want. Right?
Just a little. We had we've had a lot of things. Interesting photographs. We have a set of photographs that have never been enlarged, taken by a soldier quite illegally, I guess, at camp at Berryfield.
Oh, it would have been illegal, yeah.
Yeah, they were not allowed to photograph anything.
No, because in case the enemy got their hands on it, right?
Yeah. Beautiful photographs that we've had blown up. And we're quite enjoying those because they've never been shown before.
Well, you've got an incredible photograph. It looks like of the boys either arriving or departing from. But
departing from.
This is them leaving. Now, where are they leaving from? Is this in front of the armory in
Colbert?
Yes,
it is. Mm-hmm.
And this is our police station now, right? It's the same building.
That's May 1916.
There you go.
And we have one of those white duffel bags in our exhibit. We still do we not, from Mr. Mallory?
Yeah. And when that picture was put in the paper, a gentleman phoned me. Or emailed me, actually, and said, I have one of those white duffel bags. I saw the picture.
Really?
And I went to see him, and he had the whole footlocker, if you like, of his grandfather's.
Right.
And it was full of all these treasures.
Absolutely. Wow.
In fact, the map that we're using came out of that. Very, very interesting.
So he's let you use the entire footlocker?
Yes.
Wow.
It's there.
He's coming, I hope, on Thursday night.
And what's his name?
His name is Carol Mallory.
Okay, so big shout out to Carol Mallory, because I mean, not only because you said, well, now what's important, what's the thing to keep, I guess, after 100 years, and being able to keep that entire kit.
Yes.
Because that's what we're talking about here, is his kit.
And his kids took the duffel bag to scout camp, etc.
Oh, is that right? So they used it.
Used it.
That's awesome.
And the kids, and I guess his kids and his grandchildren, have taken the contents to school.
Show and tell.
Show and tell. So he's quite pleased at being able to share it with the broader community.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this show. It's the whole county.
Yeah. right. And now, and just to clarify, now this, because we know that this family let you use this, mm-hmm. but throughout the county, there are people who, I guess, let you use, if there's some parts of uniforms that are left.
Yes.
Maybe some bayonets, because there's always lots of those left over after the war, right?
We have a man in Brighton, a couple in Brighton, who gave us about 10 bayonets.
Really?
We have a grenade thrower. We have a German grenade.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
We didn't really look for the military, but we wanted some of it.
Mm-hmm.
The little logo that we've done is off a children's school book. And to describe it to your listeners, it's like a box with a soldier on one side and a sailor on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And they each have guns.
Right.
And this was a book designed for, I think, grade four. And in the center it said, a children's guide to the Great War.
Wow.
And it was strictly about the battles.
Yeah.
Quite incredible.
Well, and that is the most incredible part of the Great War. I mean, the war to end all wars, as they called it. It's ironic that it would be called that, because it was really the war to create every war thereafter. Well, sort of the instigator war.
That's right.
Really. So now we know there is militaria that is going to be there, but are you getting anything else? Are you getting, letters from the front?
There's letters and postcards.
Postcards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what kinds of messages are you seeing in those? I mean, that's got to be the most heart-wrenching that you're going to get.
Yes, it's the soldiers were very very limited in what they could say from the front, because they could say whatever they want and that would be censored out and covered up. So they're always at pains to say, I am well, it's a sunny day here, I can't say where I am, but then would be that. And we met, had a bit of hard going a few days ago, and I can't tell you more than that, but we're okay and we're out of it for now. And those are the kinds of things that went on. And then they always made a point of asking how things were at home, because, of course, that's where their thoughts were all the time when they weren't being fired at. And there's always those remember to tell Grandpa that I'm thinking of him, or some little thing about their personal lives, that don't forget to tell this or don't forget to do that to the kids. And I think of you every day. And it was all just mostly personal stuff, because they couldn't say much else.
Well, they couldn't say anything about their battles or the wars.
No,
they couldn't even really talk about how they were feeling.
Not
either,
really, other than I am well, or I was sick a while ago, or I was in hospital for a while.
Please buy a tin and send cookies.
Yes, there was a lot of gifts back and forth. That's the thing that's in all the chaos and the just the general turmoil at the front. You could get mail, first-class mail from England, in about 2 days,
right.
And you'd get fresh mail at the front. So even when it had to cross the sea from Canada by ship, obviously, they would still get things. They would send food that wouldn't spoil on the way to the front, coming from Canada. So knitted socks, they would get always thanking the folks back home
socks.
For the socks, the knitted socks and scarves, because they would get, this trench foot and the lice, and they always needed, and they would wear out sock after sock by all the marching and the ill-fitting boots probably. So always many thank yous, and there would be, sometimes it would be to a person who had sent it, but there would, as you know, there would be groups like the Women's Institutes and other groups, the Red Cross, would do group knittings and making of putting together, as we would call them today, care packages for the front, and they would send these off. So the soldiers would always say, gee, I don't know who sent this to us, but the cakes were delicious. I shared them with, shared it all with my mates, and it made our day. And
right.
Very grateful for help from the home front coming
to
the
front. Course, the fact that they were able to communicate with their loved ones so easily.
Yes.
Well, relatively. I mean, in today's world, it's not very easy, but relatively easy.
Yeah.
Of course, the real heartache comes when, you get a letter from the front and it's from someone who you've already been informed has passed.
We have one of those.
We had one today. Barry helped me put up a installation, and it was a letter from a soldier to his 8-year-old daughter. It was a postcard. It was an embroidered French postcard, and I guess it was in an envelope, and it said, to Margaret, love Daddy. And it said all the things that you expected, be good, help Mommy, etc.
Yeah.
And try to smile, and I'll try to smile too. Well, the postcard arrived 15 days after the telegram.
Yeah.
And the granddaughter of this gentleman has done a hooked rug. It must be 6 feet tall.
It's large, yeah.
He was killed at Vimy.
Right.
And it's a picture of the new memorial at Vimy. And it says across the top, be a good girl and try to smile.
Yeah.
Daddy. And it was made by his granddaughter.
Wow.
It's a very touching
It really is.
Well, again, that is the hardest thing to deal with, obviously, is the loss. I mean, even nowadays we have a hard time dealing with the loss.
Mm-hmm.
And we do things now that we probably didn't do back then. But the idea of communications being, you know, passing one another like that, the fact mm-hmm. that the letter arrived afterwards and, you know, or something else, you know, it's just... It is heart-wrenching, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, here are guys. I mean, nowadays we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, and we talk about shell shock back then. Mm-hmm. But we did not really understand what we were doing. I mean, nowadays, if you are in theater, you're only in theater for as long as 9 months, period.
Yeah.
If you're in any longer than that, and that's why they want people rotated out after 9 months. You can only do one consecutive tour usually. Yeah. And we've got guys doing 2, 3, 4, some as many as having done 3 or 4 tours of duty. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize just how traumatic it is to be in that. I mean, back then, yeah. I mean, from 1914 to 1918, generally, the men that went into theater were in theater for a year and a half.
Oh, yeah. There right. were many who served the whole time.
You know, exactly. There were some that served from the moment they arrived to the moment
right.
they...
Right, 14 to 18, and they were there and survived.
Some actually insisted on going back.
True enough.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, because
yeah.
they couldn't handle life outside of the regimented right. and the fact that mm-hmm. they're the thrill-a-moment lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And you do become accustomed to the fact that you can't sleep, that your life is being threatened 24/7 for, and that's why they don't let them do it for longer than 9 months now, because
good.
They don't want you to become, if you will, acclimatized mm-hmm. to that kind yeah. of life. Because again, once you're out, what do you do? I mean, you know, you hear stories even now of suicide and all of these things, and that was just as prevalent, if not more so, then. Then now, nowadays, at least we talk about it. Now there's
that's right.
now there's communications
help.
And there's help. But back then, 100 years ago,
yeah.
you know,
they didn't know what to do with them.
Nothing.
They just didn't know what to do with them. They at some point they came to. In the very beginning, it was thought to be just cowardice and
yep.
shirking.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point during the war, they said, "Okay, these people are not shirkers. They've kind of lost control of their faculties here because of the constant stress and bomb under the bombard, especially the artillery."
Yeah,
I mean, just the sheer noise of it. Even if it weren't lethal, that the level of noise that represented coming at you all the time, sometimes unexpectedly and not in a pattern. Plus, add the lethality to it, and it's a recipe for about the most stress you can absorb, mm-hmm. I think. And some people held up under that, and many did not, and who could blame them? But at least it started to be recognized as a psychological issue. They still didn't know what to do about it.
Right.
And they just kept changing the name of it over time. And battle fatigue, by World War II, it was battle fatigue, and on now it's post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Actually, I think they call it. It's called something else now. It's
called, oh, is it?
Yeah, it's called something. They don't call it PTSD anymore. Oh. Apparently, that's not the term of choice anymore. They changed it to something else.
Yeah, I guess
we're gonna take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation about how Northumberland went to war from 1914 to 1918. It is a commemorative exhibit. If you are heading down to Victoria Hall between November 3rd and December 4th. You can check it out, and I would urge you to do so. You know, bring the kids, too, because, mm-hmm. you know, we've got to continue to connect with this history. It's not just history. It's not just the past. As we're seeing from around the world now, if we don't know our history, we are doomed in some cases to not only repeat it, but to perpetuate it. We'll be right back.
Come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas.
Playing October 28th to November 3rd. Inferno, rated 14A, Queen of Cotwe, rated PG, The Accountant, rated 14A, and Keeping Up with the Joneses, rated 14A. No free passes accepted Friday, Saturday, or Sunday.
The Rainbow Cinemas are located in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West. Give them a call, 905-372-2444, or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
Want to listen to Dame Nellie Melba singing Mimi from La Boheme in 1907? Audrey Hepburn telling you what's worse than the blues. The last time Judy Garland sang Over the Rainbow. I'm Pat Bryan, and I call my show I Know What I Like, and I like the magic of radio. 8 o'clock every Sunday evening. There's nothing else like it on the air. Right here on Northumberland, 89.7 Truly local radio.
My cousin Bob and I decided to quit our hustle and bustle jobs in the corporate machine and become entrepreneurs. We are now the proud owners of Curio City. Bob has always had a keen eye for Biblo. With the legal advice of Jim McGrath, we learned the best way to set up our business, plus Jim helped us understand our lease. Jim McGrath has been lawyering for over 30 years, so he knows what makes sense in business law, plus he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
Northumberland 89.7 is radio to go. Listen to us on your smartphone wherever you are. Just go to Northumberland 89.7 and download the TuneIn app.
And welcome back. My guests in the studio are Joan Tuke and Barry Wood, and they are part of a group that have put together this incredible commemorative exhibition. They are part of the Northumberland Went to War Curatorial Committee. And you know what? We should give a shout-out to the other folks on the committee as well. We'll just ramble off the names real quickly. Dan Buchanan of Brighton, Lena Broach of Heritage Crammy, Emily Cartledge of Northumberland County Archives, Stanley Isherwood of the Coburg Museum Foundation, Marie Jones, Port Hope Archives, Rick Miller from AGN and Northumberland Photography Club, and we'll talk about the Photography Club in a second, Irina Orlowski, of the AGN, Joan Tuke, of course, and Barry Wood. All of these folks have given of their time and helped put this together, this wonderfully educational commemorative exhibit. By the way, the satellite exhibits are also located in Alderville First Nations in the Bewdley Community Center, the Brighton Municipal Building, the Coburg Public Library, the Colburn Art Gallery and Heritage Gallery, which is right across from the park in downtown Colburn, the Curio Antiques and Uniques in Grafton, Ganaraska Art and Framing in Port Hope, Inside Optical in Coburg, Lynch Rutherford Tozer of Port Hope, Northumberland County Building, the Port Hope Archives, and the Port Hope Public Library. All of these locations have either small or large displays or exhibits as part of Northumberland Went to War 1914-1918, a commemorative exhibition. Now, we know there are photographs of the boys getting ready to leave, and I can guess there are photos of people coming back. But can we get a better idea of what people are going to see? I mean, it's wonderful to see the pictures of the boys getting ready to go and the boys coming back on the ships, what have you. But what else are we going to see?
The gallery is two rooms. One is very, very large. And we have started, you can actually sign up for the war. We have a recruitment table. And then we're going to take you through training. We're going to show you some of the long, there were almost 6-foot pictures taken by the government of battalions, etc.
Right. So there's one at Branch 133, actually, in Coburg.
Okay. They're really prized.
They are. They're huge.
Yeah. I found the ones for the 139th in Coburg in Brighton and Belleville. No, excuse me, Campbellford and Belleville.
Really?
I didn't find them in Coburg.
There is one in the Coburg Legion, though.
Yes, downstairs. But not of the 139th. It's funny how they move around.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have all sorts of treasures, mementos, buttons, photographs.
Posters, a lot of posters, I would think.
A few posters for great guilt-inducing posters, both for buying victory bonds mm-hmm. and finance things, as well as enlistment things. And, you know, lots of that went on both sides. And
no, absolutely.
It's apparent.
You also put together a, if you will, a competition or a contest with the photographic group
to take
photographs of the cenotaphs.
The second gallery is called the Paul Kane Gallery, and it's quite a nice, intimate gallery. And the Northumberland Photography Club ran a contest open to any person in Northumberland mm-hmm. to take a picture. And we designated 17 cenotaphs that we wanted photographed in black and white.
Okay.
So that was a challenge. And it was what they like because they need new challenges in the photography club. So they came in by the end of July. They were judged, and we've had them printed, framed, and they're all in the Paul Kane Gallery. At the end, they will be presented to a representative of each municipality by the photographer.
Right, right.
So they will have a life after. And then in the same gallery, we picked one honor roll of people who died, or in some cases, people who survived. Mm-hmm. And they're mounted there, so you can take a look. It just makes it a little more real, I think, to read actual names.
It is, yes. And those honor rolls are beautiful works of art. I mean, it contrasts beautifully with the photographs of the 17 cenotaphs, which are, they're quite large and they're blown out, and they are really terrific. They're extremely dramatic. I think the photographers made a point of heightening whatever drama existed in the surroundings of the cenotaph or the light at the time, and they are really very moving to look at. They're mm-hmm. they're interesting objects, but the way they are shot has been I'm quite knocked out by the whole exhibition. But to counter that feel, that austere, stark, black and white dramatic thing, are these very flowery scrolls, couple of which are very beautifully decorated in multicolors, the way you think of an illuminated Bible, you know, those with the fancy letters and decorations all over the page. They have elements of that as well, and a couple of them are framed in the massive one from Colborne that's framed in 4-inch oak, and with all we could do to get it up into the elevator and up onto the wall, because it's a massive thing. So they were, a great deal of care was put into those in a completely different way from what is presented by the photographs and the content therein. A lot of the same names would be on the cenotaphs that are pictured, and if you really worked at it, you could probably find some of those same names on the honor rolls on the opposite wall, but they're completely differently presented, and it's a very powerful room to be in.
Well, it would be, and again, it. Are you seeing an uptick, if you will, in interest in the First World War from younger people? I mean, are we still seeing, the children of veterans who are quite old now? Has there been more interest, do you think, from young people in the history of the First World mm-hmm. War?
We have a school group coming, 40 high school students mm-hmm. from, I guess I can mention the school, St. Mary. And their teacher is bringing them to the ceremony at the cenotaph on the 11th. And then they're coming up to view the show in the gallery. And these kids are part of the pilgrimage to Vimy next year.
Wow. I didn't even know that was happening. Wow.
So I think that shows the interest.
I'll tell you, there's the one thing. Somebody said to me, you know, what would you, if you could go to one place, and some people say, oh, I'd like to go here. I really, really want to go to the Vimy War.
Yeah, I'm absolutely
with
you.
Every time I see video of it, or I see families who've gone there. I don't know what it is, but there's like a magnetic draw for me to that particular memorial.
Yeah, I'm with you too. You know, I mean, I haven't traveled extensively in Europe, but I have been to France. But I want to go back to France to go to Vimy.
Yeah,
the volunteer who set up that room, the Paul King Gallery, was at Vimy last summer.
Yeah.
That's
well, it is, and everybody I've spoken to who've been there, I mean, they can't even describe the feeling. Like it's beyond
it's mystical,
awe.
Yeah.
It's very.
It's on the edge of mystical, I think.
It is. Yeah, it's almost like a yeah. It's got to be mystical is probably the best word for it, because wow, because you feel it. You feel every soldier. I spoke to an older gentleman who went there, and I saw him before he passed away. He said, you know, when you're there, you literally can feel the life force of every soldier who died. To give their life, every name on every tombstone, you can feel that person when you're there.
Yeah,
it's just so overwhelming.
And if you've done any extra reading on that, I would recommend Pierre Burton's book Vimy, mm-hmm. and reading that, you get so much a sense of the human side of what each of those guys went through in the lead up to and the actual day of, including being bent over inside a trench sort of on your haunches for something like 6 hours in the wee smalls before you got the go-ahead, and after being cramped up for 6 hours, then you jump out into the daylight and start running. You know, I think
I was
even
surprised. I thought it was exceptional, that book.
Yeah, I was too.
My grade 8 teacher was at Vimy.
Uh-huh.
He kept telling us, I think he signed up a little early. He was the last private in the last row at Vimy.
Oh, is that
really?
Right, eh?
So from that time, I've just had this fascination because he kept saying this.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this wonderful sense of history. He gave up going on to university because he'd gone to war. But he was a phenomenal teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and again, there's a certain level of humanity, I think, that was bestowed upon the men who survived that particular conflict. And I mean, you know, the same is true probably for the Second World War. But the men who fought in the trenches, I've spoken to a couple of guys, or had in the past spoken to men who were in the Canadian, well, the Royal Navy during that stretch of the conflict. My great-great-grandfather was an airplane mechanic in the First World War. Oh, wow. You know, my dad used to joke to him about, you know, were you in charge of the rubber bands? And
yeah,
he said, yeah, there wasn't much of them back then, not was far. There? But, you know, the there was a certain degree of humanity that was, I don't know, maybe manifest in the men who survived, because the mere fact that they survived, for the guys who were there, in is a miracle. If yeah. You know, when I spoke to the guys who'd survived the various battles, the one thing that they said was, the fact that I'm here today, I can never explain that. I have no idea why I made it, and the guy who was standing directly beside me took one in the head.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it was that random.
Yeah, it was. It was.
I want to thank you for being here. My guests, Joan Took and Barry Wood, they are part of the Northumberland Went to War, a commemorative exhibit, if you will, the Northumberland Went to War Curatorial Committee. I can't say enough about the opportunities to see this. If you miss this, listeners, it will only be because you didn't want to see it. It's as simple as that. It's going to be there from November 3rd right through to December 4th. And I hope you enjoy the exhibit as much as I have enjoyed speaking to both of you about this. As I say, it is the Art Gallery of Northumberland at Victoria Hall, 55 King Street West in Cobourg. You can call them at 905-372-0333 or go online to artgallerynorthumberland.com. They've got other great stuff coming up as well at the Art Gallery. This is the event that starts in just a couple of days and runs right through, as I say, to December 4th. Thank you. Thank you very much for being here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a tribute, if you will, here with Bing Crosby. I'll be right back.
Hello, friends. I'm Lauren Fevens. As you join me each week on Sentimental Journey, your emails and letters tell me how cherished memories quickly surface when a special song from your past is played. So come along for more of those memories on this week's Sentimental Journey.
Heard Sunday mornings at 10 on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
The Art Gallery of Northumberland presents Northumberland Went to War, 1914 to 1918. From November 3rd to December 4th, come and experience this important exhibition depicting the impact of the First World War on the people of Northumberland County. Watch for special displays at the Colborne Art Gallery and at libraries, archives, and store windows throughout the county. Celebrating an important part of local history, Northumberland Went to War, presented by the Art Gallery of Northumberland at Victoria Hall, 55 King Street West in Cobourg. Ever wonder when is the best time of year to get a new car? At Vandermeer Toyota, it's right now. The 2016 clear-out event is on, and that means huge savings on every 2016. Only a handful of 2016 Corollas remain, with lease or finance rates from 0% OAC. Hurry in now and get your new Toyota. Vandermeer Toyota, 959 Division Street in Cobourg, 905-372-5437, or online at vandermeertoyota.com.
Northumberland 89.7 is run by volunteers. If you like radio and want to learn more, come and volunteer with us.
Bye, 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 bye a bond. And by, the bonds you buy will bring you victory. Bye, 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 bye a bond. And you'll be standing by the victory arch when Johnny comes marching home again. Oh, you should need no request, for after all, you know that you're investing in the best. Till the lads come back again, back the old attack again. Bye, bye, bye. This is no time to say you've done enough. This is the time to really do your stuff. And even if you can't be a soldier in the ranks, you can be the guy to help supply the guns and planes and tanks. This is the time for you to do your best. This is no time for you to take a rest. The enemy is reeling and his morale is low. So now's the time to fall in line and deal the final blow. Bye, 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 buy a bond.
Buy a bond.
And by and by, the bonds you buy will bring you victory. Bye, 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 buy a bond.
Buy a bond.
And you'll be standing by the victory arch. When Johnny comes marching home again, oh, you should need no request. For after all, you know that you're investing in the best. Till the lads come back again, back the old attack again, and bye, bye, bye.
And that, of course, was Bing Crosby from 1938, I believe. Actually, no, sorry, 41. and, of course, you know, they don't fund wars like that anymore. They don't sell bonds to pay for war. Now they just run up trillions and trillions in debt. That's what they do. So, again, I want to thank Joan Took and Barry Wood for being here this afternoon. They are part of this organization that has put together this incredible commemorative show. Please, if you have the opportunity to come by and check it out, and check it out this Remembrance Day as well. We hope to see you there. I'm Dave Glover. You are listening to Canada's only holistic political chat.